making mischief. You and stop making miscalculations. Resistance, the resistance front and resistance groups, they are not a state-centered issue. Rather, this resistance has risen from the Islamic community based on faith in God and a strong will to stand up and fight against oppression and crimes. And you should be sure that these groups will make you actually taste failure and defeat, you and the Israeli regime. This is what we believe in. This is divine promise. We will not forget that on this very day, last year, this very U.S. president, in one of his trips to the state of California, in a political meeting for a Democratic rally, where they were running for Congress, last year on this day, he said that we are trying to actually liberate Iran, and he said that in a matter of weeks, Iran will be liberated. And they make so many miscalculations, and they are pulling shenanigans, and that's the way that they calculate things, and that's the statement that they made. And they said that Iran will be liberated in a matter of weeks, and today is November 4th, 1 year on. You are seeing that we are here, we have gathered on the streets of Tehran and Iran, of course, and he and other evil characters, as well as other countries like Britain and all that, all of those countries are gripped by the biggest security issues, both at home and abroad, and even in occupied Palestine and at the international level and at the regional level. This is the grandeur and the power of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic community, and this is divine promise. Poor those countries that have counted on the support of this Israeli regime, which will soon be gone. And light was shed on that scandal, and especially at the time when they took a photo with each other and they bet on the losing horse. Today, is it irreparable? Of course not. Can it be repaired? Of course not. It is irreparable. And dear people of Iran, you should know, you religious and revolutionary people, the entire Iranian nation should know that, Iranian people have always been looking for freedom. They have always been a great nation throughout history, and the Iranian people have been supporting the revolution, Islam, and the Holy Quran today. You should know that if today we are under economic sanctions and we are facing a hybrid war and media war, they are putting pressure on us on these things. The nuclear issue is just a pretext. They are afraid of our power and independence. Today, the Israeli regime, the criminal Israeli regime, has more than 100 nuclear warheads. Some countries, some other countries in the region, they actually, which have reconciled with the Israeli regime, they have nuclear warheads as well. We have said time and again that we have never pursued and sought, and we will never pursue and seek nuclear warheads. However, they are using this issue as a pretext in order to stop our progress and in order to stop our independence. And here, let me tell you once again that the most important, our most important struggle on the home front inside the country, our most important issue is to pay attention to economic problems and making struggles and making efforts in order to solve economic problems facing the country. And yes, solving the economic problems of the country is as important as fighting the United States. And on this front, the parliament, the government, people, scholars, different companies, the private sector, all of them are, they should make struggles and make efforts to solve economic problems. This is a holy struggle, and we should not neglect this at all. And by God's grace, we are confident that the future, God Almighty, this is divine promise. God says if we take steps in His path and move forward with honesty, and if, of course, there are difficulties as well, if we can tolerate those difficulties, undoubtedly, victory and dignity will belong to us, belong to those who struggle in the path of God and martyrs. And the late Imam, and especially those people who serve these dear people and those who heed the orders and instructions of the leader of the Islamic Revolution. May God bless you all.
And that was Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, the parliament speaker of Iran's Majlis, speaking live on National Day Against Global Arrogance, saying history shows U.S. has always stood against free people, against especially Iran's progress and independence and security. That late Imam Khomeini warned us about Western plots from the region, about the toxicity of the Israeli regime against Palestinians and for the stability of the...
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, you've just listened to a keynote speech by Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, on the occasion of 4th of November, Student Day here in Iran, and the day of struggle against global arrogance. The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, in his speech said, the United States is the main culprit behind Israel's savage war on Gaza. He said the U.S. is responsible for many of the crimes and atrocities being committed against Palestinians by the Zionist regime because the U.S. is fully backing this brutal assault on Gaza. And the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament also said that the Israeli killing of Palestinian women and children is really a sign of the Israeli regime's desperation. He said, those who bet on Israel are betting on the losing horse. And he said, our first and foremost struggle is for a better economy, for a stronger economy, to solve the day-to-day problems of ordinary people. This is one of our most urgent problems which we need to solve. And of course, he also had strong words, strong warnings for the Israeli regime. He said, the day will come very soon that the Israeli regime will be humiliated. He also said that the crimes being committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinians, mostly civilians, mostly women and children, is the depth of is the depth of humiliation, and for Israel is really sinking to the depths of humiliation for Israel. Those were the main points. We now go for a short break and we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs. Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. In terms of management, many good things have been done in the administration. The value of this, in my opinion, is no less than our economic activities and progress. One of these good things is your presence among the people and you're directly witnessing the problems that the people are facing. The way you go among the people, hear what they have to say, answer the questions and allow them to tell you your problems are very good. This is very useful. This is useful in many ways. First, you get first-hand information, but it has other benefits as well. It allows you to have a close, humble, friendly relationship with the people. This is very important. We have no right to talk to people from a position of superiority or arrogance, because we are not anybody special, and all that exists belongs to the people. If we have been given a position, a job, or a responsibility to fulfill, first of all, it has been given to us by the people, and secondly, it has been given to us to serve the people.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The simple lifestyle and the reduction of formalities in the personal working behavior of the administration, especially with regard to the president himself, is impressive to me. This is something important and worthy of attention. The administration's revolutionary mindset, the jihadi spirit that is shown in some of the activities that were mentioned in the gentleman's report, and the recruitment of young people in various managerial positions are all very important matters. They are necessary, and thank God we are witnessing these things in this administration. So some good work, which is gratifying and worthy of praise, has also been done in the managerial sector. In the field of foreign policy, the government's dynamism in its foreign policy is very good. The policy that you have adopted having relations with neighbors is a very good policy. It should be followed up on. We should not have disputes with any of our neighbors. If there is a dispute, it should be turned into cooperation. This is something that is possible, and it has been done to some extent. This should be continued. As we have relations with all governments in the world that are interested in having relations with us, with one limited exception, which is clear. We have relations with different continents, with South America, Africa, Asia, and East Asia, everywhere. This policy of establishing numerous diverse relations with various countries, with the characteristics that they have politically, climatically, economically, culturally, etc., is the correct thing to do.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
On Saturday, more than 1 million people gathered in Atatürk Airport in Istanbul in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza. The rally was attended by Turkish President as well as a number of ministers and parliament members. Erdogan said the Western countries that shed crocodile tears over the death of civilians in Ukraine are not only turning a blind eye to the death of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but also supporting it. He added that Turkey is against this double standard and hypocritical behavior. Turkish President also went on to say that the West has mobilized its politicians and media to legitimize the massacre of the innocent people of Gaza.
The main culprit behind the massacre unfolding in Gaza is the West. The massacre in Gaza is entirely the work of the West. Israel will not last even 3 days without the support of Western countries. They fully support the child killers in Gaza. Israel is now behaving like a war criminal.
Erdogan also warned that his country is preparing to reveal to the world that Israel is a war criminal.
We came here with our kids to stand with the people of Palestine, to voice our rejection to the killing of children. This is not a war. This is a genocide. Everyone knows and sees this, but they are unfortunately silent. I did not want to be silent. That's why I came here.
The rally-goers chanted slogans condemning Israeli atrocities in the Gaza Strip, calling it the genocide of this century. They called on their government to take concrete actions to end the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
At the concert today, of course, I canceled it. And I came here to voice my rejection to the Israel massacre against civilians and to support Palestinian people who have been witnessing a real massacre for the past 22 days. I hope that the voice of the 1 million who attended to this rally would reach the 3 billion Muslims all over the world, and we can push it to stop aggression.
The rally was attended by political party leaders, politicians, and artists. Protesters from different nationalities also attended to show their support for Gaza. They voiced their anger at the Israeli war on a blockaded strip that has no electricity, water, and even internet.
I am from Gaza and my whole family is there. I have lost contact with them since yesterday. For the past 22 days, Gaza has been under attack and civilians and children are dying. The international community is silent and all we need now is a ceasefire as even hospitals are being bombed and the situation is very bad in the strip.
Following Erdogan's speech, Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen ordered Israeli diplomats in Turkey to return to Israel and called for a reassessment of ties with Turkey due to what he called harsh criticism by leaders in Turkey against the military offensive on Gaza.
Just like other cities around the world, people in Istanbul are calling for an end to the Israeli aggression on Gaza. People here want their government and the international community to help stop the Israeli genocide of Palestinians. Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
In the limelight.
A new survey has shown that employment in Germany has dropped for the first time in 3 years. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Bloomberg, citing the German Info Institute for Economic Research, wrote, "Hiring in Germany has stalled amid a worsening economic environment as the country continues to struggle with an energy crisis and soaring borrowing costs." A measure reflecting hiring activity dropped to its lowest level since February 2021 this month, as employers in manufacturing and construction are thinking twice before taking on new staff, the study revealed. The robust expansion of employment seen over the past few months has come to a standstill, said Klaus Warup, head of surveys at Info, adding, due to a lack of orders, companies are being rather cautious about filling vacant positions. Economists say that the German labor market is showing the first cracks in what had been until now a very resilient environment and is now losing steam as overall economic activity weakens. Unemployment is expected to further increase until the economy recovers, experts warn. Experts said companies' willingness to hire new staff will presumably rise again once the economy recovers. In the medium term, demographic change will deprive the labor market of more and more workers. Hirings in the EU's largest economy dropped for the first time in nearly 3 years, a separate survey of purchasing managers showed recently. This comes as businesses and industry are increasingly pessimistic regarding Germany's economic outlook amid weaker external demand and a lack of orders, as well as shortages of qualified workers and tighter monetary policy. Germany's economy officially slipped into a technical recession in the first quarter of the year after contracting by 0.3%. Its GDP is expected to shrink by another 0.5% by the year's end. RT noted the struggling German economy could once again be called the sick man of Europe if structural issues are not addressed immediately. Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Suing has warned, European countries are often given this label when they experience economic difficulties, social unrest, or impoverishment. Germany received this notorious status in late 1990s and was described this way into early 2000. Suing said in his address at Handelsblatt Banken Summit 2023 recently, we are not the sick man of Europe, but it is also true that there are structural weaknesses that hold back our economy and prevent it from developing its great potential. We will become the sick man of Europe if we do not address these structural issues now. He added, identifying the issues as high and unpredictable energy costs, slow internet connections, outdated rail networks, digitalization backlogs, a lack of skilled workers, excessive bureaucracy and long approval procedures. The EU's largest economy continues to grapple with challenges in its manufacturing sector as it suffers from higher energy costs. It officially slipped into a technical recession in the first quarter of the year as GDP growth was revised from 0 to -0.3%. The Bundesbank announced recently that the economy was likely to shrink this quarter thanks to slow private consumption and the increasing weakness of the industry. The Deutsche Bank chief executive said, "We must not deceive ourselves. We are still lagging behind our international competitors. Even if the special economic situation caused by interest rates currently glosses over this somewhat, more for some institutions, less for others." According to him, European economies should avoid becoming too dependent on non-European banks. The biggest task lies with banks, whose roles are changing as a result of the global shifts, Suing noted. The banker suggested, in Europe, we need a framework that gives banks more leeway to lend, facilitates capital market financing, and enables Europe-wide growth. Germany's crucial construction sector has been on the brink of collapse, putting in jeopardy the overall economy. The Economist reported that recently, citing housing giant Vonovia, the report says the sector makes up 12% of the country's GDP and employs 1 million construction workers. The chief executive of Vonovia, Ralf Busch, was quoted as saying, "We are sending our construction industry into the abyss." The article indicated that despite the German government's pledge to build 400,000 flats a year, industry estimates have shown that about 700,000 a year are needed, not least to house the more than 1 million Ukrainians taking shelter in the country. Last year, just 295,000 new buildings were built. Busch described the resulting shortage of affordable housing in parts of the country as a societal tinderbox. The Economist wrote that soaring energy prices and high building material costs as a result of supply chain disruptions have been crippling the construction industry. Meanwhile, higher interest rates have increased the cost of debt that many German builders rely on to get projects off the ground, it noted. All of this has resulted in construction firms and property developers going bust, with 437 building companies filing for insolvency in the first 4 months of this year, representing an increase of 20% year-on-year. It is not a functioning market, head of think tank Info Clemens Fius said, pointing to remorseless red tape, namely the introduction of rent break as well as strict environmental regulations. The German Property Federation ZIA said in its spring report that housing shortages have likely reached their highest level in 20 years and that the gap between supply and demand may widen to 700,000 buildings by 2025. According to ZIA estimates, 1.4 million people will be looking for a place to live in 2024 and will not be able to find one if they don't turn things around immediately.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Israel's massacre of Palestinians continue. The latest figures, almost 9,000 murdered, including some 3,700 children and 2,200 women. Iran's leader has said that Muslim governments must insist on an immediate end to the crimes and also to block oil exports to the Zionist regime, while the Iranian foreign minister has said that Israel and the U.S. will have to prepare for a harsh response if the Gaza bloodshed continues. More and more, this war is coming at a cost for Tel Aviv. While Israel conducts its ground operations inside of Gaza, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is taking a beating for not caring enough for the captives. This is while the war has widened regionally, involving Hezbollah on a limited scale and Yemen, while missiles from Syria have been fired at Israel sporadically. To make sense of it all, let me introduce our guests. Richard Metters, journalist and commentator, joins us from Vienna. Also joining us is Bill Doris, who's an anti-war activist organizer from New York. Welcome to you both. Richard Metters, let me start with you. And I'd like to start out with what Iran's leader has said. The people in Gaza, he said, have stirred the human conscience with their patience. And he said even in Western countries, mentioning England and France and states across the U.S., he said people have come out in huge numbers and they've chanted slogans against Israel and the U.S. government. And he said that their reputations have been ruined. How much of an impact have these countries that are so strong in their support for Israel suffered in their global standing, do you think?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I think the words of Iran's leader are very important because we have a problem here where people in England, people in the West are coming out in their hundreds of thousands and saying, we don't want war in Gaza. We want you to stop arming Israel. And the governments don't listen. They do not represent their people in any aspect. And you think this is normal because it is the West that created Israel and bankrolled Israel. But the problem is that the Arab countries are doing it too. Jordan only today, after almost a month of Israel bombing Gaza, only today finally recalled its ambassador. And even that is not enough. We have Latin American countries, Bolivia cut ties, Chile and Colombia recalled their ambassadors. These Latin American countries are doing more than some Arab countries. I think that their global standing is suffering a lot, and their global standing of these Western countries is suffering equally. But if the Arab countries don't wake up, and I'm talking especially about the kingdoms in the Persian Gulf, if they don't wake up and do something, they are really going to suffer. And someone like Keir Starmer, who's the Labour leader in England, when it was Ukraine, he had no problem calling Putin a war criminal. Now when it comes to Netanyahu, he says it's not his place to decide who's a war criminal. I mean, this is hypocrisy and double standards. And, it's such a sad state of affairs that we can choose in England between Tories and Tories light. And the problem is they're all Zionists and they always have been. These people do not represent anyone in England. And the protests that are coming this Saturday and next Saturday are going to be even larger and they will hit 1 million, if not more.
All right. Bill Doris, in terms of the activism in you, the Iran's leader has also... Okay. Well, Richard, let me ask you about another statement from Iran's leader, which kind of applies to how you say the Persian Gulf Arab countries can do more. And he has said that Muslim governments overall must block the export of oil and other essentials to what he called the Zionist regime. You know, they can obviously do that. And, you know, this has the air and the feel of the BDS movement, in a sense, but on a much larger scale that requires, obviously, the realization and then the action of countries, regionally, in terms of the oil, perhaps, and then internationally, in terms of not buying goods made in Israel. Do you think that the will is there?
It is not there, unfortunately. And the thing is that, you know, we cannot just leave all of the responsibility and shoulder the responsibility on people coming out in London. It is the Arab countries, especially those who have gas and oil, that should be shouldering the main responsibility, not only as Arabs, but also as Muslims. There needs to be solidarity. There needs to be respect for other human beings. There was a time when these Arab countries were one Arab country. And they do have a common tongue and a common history and a common religion and a common culture. But where is the respect for that? Egypt could close and shut the Suez Canal right now and stop this war. Saudi Arabia could shut down oil exports for just a week and stop this war right now. They are not doing this. To me, this is a gross betrayal, not just to fellow human beings, but to fellow Arabs and fellow Muslims. It is truly hurtful. And I can't imagine what people in Gaza feel. You know, the desperation, just looking around and thinking, where are, our fellow Arabs and Muslims? Where are they? It's not coming from these Gulf kingdoms. The only ones that are really doing something are the axis of resistance. You know, Yemen are firing ballistic missiles all the way from 1,500 kilometers, and they haven't even had time to rebuild the country. Syria is the same thing. Syria is barely standing because of this war for 10 years that's been waged by the West, and it's still trying to help. You know, Iran, Syria, they're under sanctions. They're still trying to help, and I think that is a very admirable thing, and it's an example for the rest of the region and the rest of the world to follow.
All right. I've picked one more statement by Iran's leader, which I'll come back to that later. I'd like to now reflect on what Iran's foreign minister has said today. He has warned against Israel's relentless onslaught, and he has said that both Tel Aviv and Washington will have to be prepared for a harsh response if the brutalities continue. This kind of reminds me of the way that Hamas came out time and again warning Israel when the Al-Aqsa mosque desecration was taking place, when they did those incursions and they killed the Palestinians, when they detained the Palestinians. They kept issuing warning after warning after warning. Iran has issued a number of warnings now, and this one saying that, you better watch out because you have to prepare for a harsh response. Do you think that Israel needs to be ready for that?
Israel are not ready for anything. We saw how Hamas, which are not just under sanctions, they're under siege. Which are basically the same thing, but it's even worse in Gaza, that look what they were able to do nevertheless. You know, the Hamas infrastructure is completely intact. The tunnels are intact. Their firepower, their strategy and tactics are intact. Israel have been trying every day secretly to get into Gaza, and they are failing on a daily basis, and that is why they haven't, quote-unquote, announced this ground invasion. Because they keep failing. They cannot get in. So can you imagine what Lebanon, what Hezbollah have prepared for the Israelis, what Syria and Iraq, the Hashd al-Shaabi, have prepared for the Israelis, never mind what Iran has prepared. Iran has had these missiles for 30 years that can already reach Tel Aviv. So, you know, and Yemen also, as I said, that is already reaching the occupied Palestinian territories. I mean, yesterday the Israelis failed to shoot down one of those Yemeni missiles, and they didn't say where it landed, which gives us an indication of how embarrassing this is, that Yemen were able to hit them all the way from, 1,500 kilometers and cause casualties. The thing is that also Hezbollah are already involved in this war. You know, they have stretched the Israeli forces thin, and they are pounding Israel's towers, their infrared sensors, their electronic surveillance and radar equipment every day. They are blinding the Israelis in the north. So this is already putting pressure on them. And not to mention in Syria and Iraq, the Ain al-Assad base in Iraq is being hit regularly by the resistance. Conoco oil fields, Omar oil fields, Shaddadi, these are all being hit in Syria on a regular basis, 30 times already since October 7th. This is already a regional war. It's always been a regional war. And the Israelis and Americans are taking such a beating in Iraq and Syria and from Yemen and Lebanon that they don't even mention them, which I find very bizarre, because you would think they would call out Yemen. They just stay silent and keep the focus on Hamas, because, of course, Everybody's looking at what they're doing to Gaza. And the Israelis are so embarrassed by what is happening to them on these other fronts, they won't even bring them up or mention them.
All right. Bill Doris joins us now, anti-war activist organizer from New York. Bill Doris, I need to address this question to you, which I asked my guests previously. And that is and that's because of your, as an activist, I think that this applies to you to get your idea on, and that's the sanction that Iran's leader has asked the Muslim governments to do when it comes to the export of oil and also other essentials to the Zionist regime, as he has called it. Now, this reminds me of the BDS movement, where it was activist-related or activism-related. Do you foresee this being something that's going to be set in motion? Do you foresee, or do you give it any hope of actually becoming reality? And what can be done in order for this to spread, especially on a larger scale when it comes to governments, and perhaps applying that as a law?
What you say is something the people of the world have to fight for. I mean, the United States, the war, the genocide against the Palestinian people, a country the size of the racist state of Israel would not be able to perpetuate this without the endless supply of dollars and arms from the United States. Israel does not make planes, most of the bombs, missiles, they're all being made here and supplied for free to the Zionist regime, the genocidal regime. It's necessary for those countries who do say they stand in solidarity with Palestine to put their money where their mouth is. It's not even so much the oil as the money, the tremendous amount of investment and economic relations that exist that the Israeli regime has with many countries, including in the Arab and Muslim world. Chevron, which steals the natural gas from off the coast of occupied Palestine, also operates in Saudi Arabia. Citibank, which finances Israel's purchases, because Israel spends its arms money it gets from the United States so fast that it has to, Citibank finances the difference between what they've spent already before the Congress can allocate some more. And they also operate in many countries. There was a time when, in the time of Gamal Abdel Nasser, there was a time when there was a boycott not only on Israeli products, but on corporations that did business with Israel. Countries should not. I remember after the Iranian Revolution in 1979, one of the first actions of the Islamic Republic was to cancel arms sales because the Shah would buy so many arms from the United States. Why should countries be buying arms, planes, and so on from the very corporations that supply planes to the Israeli war machines?
All right. But,
around the world, thanks and boycott, and we especially need to do it here because here's the real source of the problem.
The humanitarian aspect of this, when you think it can't get any worse, it does, Richard Medhurst, and I'm curious as to the way that Israel is being blamed for this, but we know that the U.S. is complicit also, not only in terms of the arms, assistance, but also in terms of the planning. But on a humanitarian level, I'm just trying to understand the U.S. thinking here. We're looking at the tons of bombs that have been dropped, which is being compared to Hiroshima, and in terms of the number of people that are being killed. Richard Medhurst, we also have this U.S. politician. Granted, he's maybe a bit on the extreme side, Lindsey Graham, but he has said in an interview that there's no limits to the number of civilians that is justifiable for Israel to kill in this war, which Israel claims to be on Hamas. Is this the type of thinking that is really prevalent when it comes to U.S. politicians, Richard Medhurst?
I mean, Lindsey Graham is a neoconservative ghoul. So, you know, I expect nothing less coming out of his mouth. He is, you know, he's more than happy to see everybody from Syria, from Palestine, from Iran dying just so he can get his way. And the corporations that my fellow guests mentioned can get their way because he is a PR agent for them. I mean, this thinking is really, really disgusting. And the New York Times reported that the Israelis, in meetings with their American counterparts, they told them that, you know, the West should shut up about what's happening in Gaza because during World War II, the United States dropped nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August 1945. And then, you know, the Royal Air Force bombed Dresden, which some argue was even worse than Hiroshima. You know, I don't think that these are acceptable arguments, because since then it has been made very clear that these things were wrong. You know, there was no need to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was just a show of force for the Soviets. And you know, this hell that's unleashed on people in Dresden, you know, you can't just use those as arguments to butcher people in Gaza. People in Gaza are not Nazis, and they're not Imperial Japan. These are civilians. This is their land. They have not gone out and attacked anyone. They are being attacked. They are being besieged. They are being occupied since 75 years. So, you know, this argument is ridiculous. And I don't understand how the Americans, you know, it's one thing to listen to the Israelis, but it's another thing to say, okay, we'll keep supporting you. You know, Israel has wanted to drag America, to drag the United States into a regional war. For decades, they've been trying this stuff. And it looks like they might be getting their way, but I think they've bitten off more than they can chew, because Israel does not have what it takes to even penetrate Gaza, never mind take on Hezbollah and take on Iran and the Hashd-Shaabi in Syria and Yemen. This is lunacy. It's the resistance that has gotten stronger, not Israel. And so they have miscalculated very, very, very deeply and greatly. No matter how much they bomb people in Gaza, they're not moving anywhere. And we should remember that besides the corporations that finance you know, Israel's butchering of Gazans, Israel and the United States have been planning to build a canal on Gaza, the Ben-Gurion Canal, to rival the Suez Canal. They've been trying this since the 1960s to plan it, and they wanted to put nuclear bombs in the Negev Desert. This is a classified document from 1963. So we should remember that they have this economic incentive in mind, and they're openly telling Sisi, the Egyptian president, we'll pay you to take the Gazans. We will cancel and wipe your debt clean if you take the Gazans. Gazans are not going anywhere. Israel thinks that if they keep bombing it, they can frighten Gazans into leaving. That's not happening. And my fellow guest also correctly mentioned the gas that Chevron is stealing in the Mediterranean. This is so important because in the last 3 days, Israel has handed out 12 licenses to companies. How are they extracting gas if they're thought this is an existential threat for these taking gas out of the Mediterranean? They steal the gas from Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria for a long, long time now. The Leviathan Basin is such a rich quantity of gas, you know, that it's just a dream come true. And Europe needs that gas because they sanctioned Iran and they sanctioned Russia and blew up Nord Stream. So Israel is trying to hurry up and deliver on its promises, but it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you agree, Bill Doris, with our guest there, that perhaps Israel is biting more than it could chew when it wants this to be a regional thing, pulling the U.S. into a war, most likely to have Iran one of its central, I guess, attractions for this war?
Well, what Lindsey Graham says, the Pentagon brass and the corporate ruling class behind them think. They support the eradication, the attempt of the Israeli racist regime to eradicate the people of Palestine. They have basically, Israel has long been part of a protection racket that the United States runs in that part of the world, an enforcer. Whereby countries pay tribute to the United States, and which Iran no longer does since the Shah was overthrown, and that's why Iran is a U.S. target, and they depend on that flow of wealth, and war is central to the position of the obsolescent position of Wall Street and the world economy, and like a gangster, what they have is their rep. They got to show they can kill and destroy, and people have to be afraid of them because they have nothing else to offer. But of course, all this endless supply of arms and money to Israel, which is really just a component of the U.S. war machine, is stolen from people here. It's stolen. They'd rather bomb people who are already homeless in Gaza and make them homeless again, than build housing for the hundreds of thousands of homeless in this city. There's 119,000 sure. children in the U.S. New York City school system. Mm-hmm. But the military, we basically have a military regime in this country and a corporate ruling class behind it. They would do anything rather than spend money on okay. human need, any excuse. Israel is an excuse.
The U.S. wants to assist Israel militarily, as you have mentioned, to the degree that it is. But it doesn't want to come and promote a ceasefire. Of course, Israel also says that a ceasefire would mean that that means it's a defeat for us in front of Hamas. Now, I'm trying to understand the logic over here, where the root of the problem has to be the fact that occupation needs to be targeted, that the apartheid policy of Israel is the problem. Those are the types of things that need to be targeted. But yet the U.S. is going the military route. Why is it that the focus by the U.S. is not on those things, which is really at the source of the problem?
Because the U.S. Has nothing to offer the world. All they depend on is military force, is military power to keep to maintain their position in the world economy, and that depends on destruction. That depends on destruction. They cannot allow a strong Africa, a strong Asia, a strong Arab world, a strong Muslim world, the entire economy depends right now on not just on the production of bombs and weapons of mass destruction and their use, but on suppressing economic development around the world.
All right, thank you for that, Bill Doris, anti-war activist, organizer from New York, and Richard Methurst, a pleasure, journalist and commentator from Vienna. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mika Batawe and the entire team. Miss goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.